Namo tassa bhagavato arahato samma sambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato samma sambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato samma sambuddhassa. Homage to the Buddha, the Blessed Noble and fully self-awakened one. This evening, I thought to tackle this business of need, sufficiency, and greed. As you know, in the UK here, well, I think it's all over the world, but in Europe and the UK, we've got these huge national debts. And in the UK, it's made worse by the wonderful Brexit deal that was made. And everybody's predicting high inflation and a downturn. This is frightening, you know, because you lose your savings, you might lose your work. It can all be very upsetting. So I just thought, well, what we need to do is undermine the fear and anxiety by asking ourselves, what do we actually need? So what I want to do is just explain to you, and most of you won't know, what the rules for the monks are when it comes to their physical well-being. So the first one is shelter. So in the discourse on how to establish right mindfulness, the Buddha said that we should be happy with the wilderness, a root of a tree, or an empty hut. Now, those reflect the three seasons. So you want a hut when it rains in the rainy season, you want a tree in the hot season, and in the cool season, well, you can sleep anywhere and do your meditation anywhere. And in fact, if I remember rightly, when the Buddha settled down to his meditation, which brought about the liberation, the enlightenment, near a place called Uruvela, which is now, of course, Bodh Gaya, it sounds as though it was the cool season, which makes a lot of sense. If you're going to make a big effort, you want it to be cool. And so when we look around our houses, our flats, or wherever we're living, you can ask yourself, well, what do you actually need, right? Not what you want, or even what is sufficient, but what do you actually need? So I'm thinking of things like heating. So there was a little article where a man had explained that when he called up the electrical company, they told him, well, to reduce heating, just heat one room. And he seemed to be quite upset by that. He had a great big, it sounded as though he lived on his own. I mean, he had a family, that's different, of course. But living on his own in a house, he was quite upset that he had now reduced his heating to one room. Well, I mean, if you think about what you actually need, it probably is just the room you're generally living in. So I met somebody at Gaia House when I was teaching there. I've known him for a long time. And he says during winter, he lives at 12 degrees centigrade. You'd have to, if you really want to know how he does it, I can always put you in touch with him. But that's what he actually gets down to, 12 degrees. And then he says, if it's under 12, then he starts to lose it. He can feel the body heat really reducing too much. So that's all he needs. He needs just 12 degrees. But of course, we tend to walk around our houses at 25 degrees, you know. In the middle of winter, you find people wearing just a t-shirt walking around the house. So again, it's, you know, if the price of gas and all this is going to go up, well, it throws us back on ourselves. I mean, how much do you actually need? There was an article for people who are really poor, who are really going to have real problems, that they can buy these rather cheap jackets and pullovers that are heated. You know, you just stick the plug in, and the plug, and the batteries fill up, and then the body armor gives you heat. So again, it's just a reflection on, I mean, one exercise I was going to suggest at the end was, what would you take with you? What would you need if you were a refugee, you see? And of course, there are people who are homeless. I mean, you know, we know that people are living really rough, even in the depths of winter. So it's not a case of, you know, getting to a point where we're like that, but it's a good question to ask, you know, when it comes to dwelling, you know, what do I actually need? I mean, I lived for some time just in a bedsit, and it was in the house of my teacher in Birmingham, and she had prepared this room specifically for a monk, and it was just, you know, just a bed, a place to sit next to the fire, gas fire, and on one side looking was just a small stove, a fridge, and a little cabinet for, you know, for pots and pans and stuff like that. I was very happy. So that's to do with dwelling, right? What do you actually need? Now, when it comes to food, the monastic has to go out with his bowl and just accept what's given. So there were famines in those days. And often they would have to just make do with whatever was put in the bowl in terms of rice. The Buddha, lay people complained to the Buddha that these monks and nuns were turning up at all times of the day and asking for food and, you know, being quite a nuisance. So he made a rule. He said, right, well, from now on, you have to go out in the early hours or during the morning on alms round, and you have to finish eating and everything else by noon. Well, there was a lot of monks rejected that. You know, they got very upset. I mean, you know, they would normally have had an evening meal. They would normally have had three meals a day. And so there was a bit of a rebellion. And the Buddha said, look, he said, if you want to belong to this dispensation, then that's what you're going to have to do. And for the most part, monks try to keep that rule. So again, it's a case of, well, how much food do you actually need? And of course, there's a distinction between good food and food which is not so good for the body. And that's the problem, I think, with people on these food banks. They tend to, when you get a shot of a food bank, some of it tends to be all tins, for heaven's sake. But again, it's, you know, it's just settling down and just thinking to yourself, making up a little menu for yourself, which is really basic. So now, you know, when I was in India, the regular food for the ordinary worker, the ordinary person, you might say, was in North India, was dal, vegetable curry, and a chapati. And that's what you got every day. You didn't, you know, you didn't say, well, I'm going to have a Chinese today. It was just, you know, dal, vegetable curry, and a chapati. And that's what you made do with. Interestingly enough, when they started to recruit men during conscription for the Second World War, they were really taken aback to find that many of the men weren't having three meals a day at all, were actually eating really bad and were happy to join the army just to get some decent food, I think. So, you know, it's like another little exercise you might set yourself for a little while anyway, is, you know, to have a day as if you were poor, as if you couldn't, you know, just buy the food you need. What would you eat? What would sustain you for that day, you know? So again, it's just taking away this fear that, you know, if we become very poor for one reason or another, that's not the end of the world. You just make do. I mean, I'm old enough to have memories of just after the war. And I remember going to my aunt's for food and on the toast, you see, you put the butter on the toast and then you scraped it off. And what you were left with was just a sort of a little suggestion. And then they did the same with the jam. I mean, I couldn't believe it. I was only a kid. I must have been about 6 or 7, you know, and just looking at this, they put a jam on the bread and then scraped it all off and then stuck it on another piece. So all these were considered luxury. I mean, the food was the bread itself. When it comes to clothing, the Buddha noticed that people were coming away with huge amounts of cloth from the lay people. And so he actually set out one night on a cold night. This would have been the cold season, to actually decide how many robes, you know, you actually need. So in the beginning of the night, he had his lower robe and the top robe, this one here. And then as the night got colder, he needed another robe. So he took another robe. And then towards the end of the night, you know, the coldest hour is just before dawn, he felt he needed one more. So he put the last two together, right? And those are your three robes, the lower robe, the upper robe, and the sangati, the one that you see monks putting over their shoulder. And that was it. And that was the rule then. That's all you could have. But of course, rules are rules, and you get ways round it by having extra cloth, which is a bit cheeky, I know. But it was just coming down to what do you actually need? And I mean, of course, we're talking about the tropics, but what do you actually need? You know, how many coats do you need? How many pair of shoes do you need? And it's just drawing ourselves down to that basic need that I think gets rid of a lot of the fear that comes from a loss of wealth, whatever that wealth is, a loss of your job and so on and so forth. And just as an aside, of course, it does make us more aware of where we're getting our clothes from, you know. I met somebody and they showed me this. I was in Shropshire and they showed me this jumper they just bought, you see. And they said they'd bought it for so many pounds, I think, for £3 or £4 or something. And they'd gone to this other shop, probably Marks and Spencer's, and it was a similar jumper, it was £12, you see. And when I said to them, yeah, but this is probably made in one of those satanic sweatshops in Bangladesh, he was taken by surprise. It hadn't even occurred to him to think that way. Yeah. Now the final one. So we've done shelter, food, clothing. The final one is medicine. Now, the Buddha said that we should be contented with fermented cow's urine. Now that might come as a big surprise, but in fact, it's a very well-known Ayurvedic medicine. It's an antibiotic. Let me just get it here. It's an antibiotic, antifungal, and if you take it regularly, it maintains the homeostasis of the body to lower cholesterol, relieve tension, enhance liver function, and slow down aging. So tomorrow morning, you need to get out there and get your bottle of fermented cow's urine. So that's what we're supposed to be happy with. Now, frankly, I've never tried it. So I don't want to say whether it's any good or not, but it's definitely, you know, Ayurvedic medicine, and people do drink it. So here we have this whole business of really asking ourselves what we need, what we actually need to sustain life. So this is only the physical needs, yeah? I mean, there's also the other side, our cultural needs, our heart needs, and things like that. In the Buddha's instructions to the monks, basically, the day was to be spent meditating and remembering and studying and understanding the Dharma. So in those days, of course, you had to memorize the teaching. Yeah. You know, they didn't have clever little gadgets like we've got to remember things. So one exercise, you know, you can just set yourself is to live one day with just what you need and just find out for yourself. The second one is more to do with just, you know, lifting the level a bit, to sufficiency. And that depends upon, I think, a lot on our culture. For instance, when it comes to clothes, you know, people need a set of clothes for work, they need a set of clothes for leisure, set of clothes for climbing mountains and things like that. So it's not a case of, you know, making ourselves miserable, but just being clear, you know, in ourselves as to what we actually need. And I think that if you spend just one day with need, then I think that undermines a lot of the fear and anxiety that comes about with the loss of wealth, no matter how much or how little wealth you had, to suddenly find yourself unemployed and on the dole, which is pretty miserable. You just find you can live with it, at least at a physical level. And then, of course, there's a final one of greed. Well, that takes us to another step, that does. So I think most of us know when we're being greedy. I don't think I need to go into that too much. So a couple of exercises there. When it comes to food, you know, just to have one day with what you feel is the cheapest and most sustainable food that you could have, but was good for the body. Just one day a week, you know, just to remind ourselves. Yeah. And when it comes to clothes, just go through the wardrobe and just see how much of clothes you're not wearing. I remember somebody was in the habit of, in their wardrobe, if they used a piece from it, a shirt or some sort of dress, they would put it at one end. And then over the year, they would see all the clothes they hadn't actually used, and they would take them down to the charity shop. So there's all sorts of little tricks that we can play on ourselves in order to actually, you know, just come down to sufficiency. And eventually it saves a lot of money, you know. When it comes to heating, you know, that's really quite crucial for us these days. And our heating bill is going to go up something awful. Just by, you know, being careful with it and wearing jumpers, you know, it won't be that heavy on us, I don't think. Very good. So I can only hope my words have been of some assistance, that they have not caused any confusion, and that by your devotion to practice and the practice of poverty, simplicity, that's the word, simplicity, you will be liberated from all suffering sooner rather than later.